I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, just how many people are poor in this country, and who are they? It might sound like a simple question, but it is not. The federal government is trying out a new formula to get at that question. We'll hear two very different perspectives on what's wrong with the old measure and whether the new one is any better. That conversation is coming up. But first, we wanted to take a look at what's happening to the Occupy movement. There have been new developments over the weekend that are still going on as we speak. Across the country, local officials have been getting tougher on those demonstrations created in solidarity with the Occupy Wall Street group. In a number of cases, police have moved to break up encampments in public spaces. Today, we're focusing on what's happening in Oakland, California, the scene of one of the most contentious showdowns over an Occupy encampment in the country. Police moved into the camp early Monday morning, making dozens of arrests. We're joined now by Bob Butler. He's a reporter for KCBS Radio, and he's been covering events at Occupy Oakland. Also with us, Martin Costi. He's an NPR correspondent based in Seattle, and he's also been covering the Oakland Occupy movement. Welcome to you both. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Bob, I'm going to start with you. As we said, the police moved into Occupy Oakland today. The mayor of Oakland, Gene Kwan, had issued orders on Friday saying it was time to break up the camp there. Why? What precipitated this decision right now?
I think when the Occupy movement first started in Oakland, it lasted for maybe about 3 or 4 days. The mayor said, could you guys please leave? The police moved in and removed all the tents. That night, it was a Tuesday night when we had all the trouble, police firing tear gas, people were getting hit, people getting arrested. A few days later, the tents were back, and the mayor said, okay, well, you can stay in the plaza, but just don't camp there. Well, people, of course, defied that and began putting up tents, and more than 100 tents were put back up. After a while, it got to the point where it became, as the mayor said, a safety hazard. Sanitary conditions weren't that great. The time that I was out there a couple of weeks ago, there were no bathroom facilities. There were no porta potties or anything like that. They have those now, but it became a situation where they said, look, you know, this is not what we need to be doing. Yes, I support you, but you guys just can't be camping here. And so they issued warnings last week saying that this is an illegal assembly. You can be arrested at any time. They handed out one flyer, I believe it was on Friday, another one on Saturday. And then, of course, the police moved in Monday morning they arrested a couple of, maybe about a dozen people so far, and all the tents are being taken down.
And I understand, though, Bob, just to clarify this, I understand that the order came a day after a young man was shot to death.
Yes,
there was the Occupy site. What happened?
There was a shooting nearby. The Occupy is located at Frankogawa Plaza, which is in front of City Hall at 14th and Broadway. You know, not at the camp, but near the camp at the entrance to the Bay Area Rapid Transit, the BART station, the subway. There was some kind of an altercation, and somebody pulled out a gun and shot this young man, and he died. Now, there has been controversy. Was he an Occupy member or not? It's not really clear. There was somebody who was at Occupy who said it was her cousin. And then some people said that it was the shooter who had been camping at the Occupy site. But you got to remember, the people that moved in to set up Occupy Oakland were not the people that normally hang out there at that plaza. There are people that hang out there every day. Some of them are homeless. Some of them are people that just hang out there. So it's not clear whether he was an Occupy protester or somebody who just happened to be, as they say, in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Martin, you've been covering Occupy Oakland as well, and we've heard that the protesters are furious. In fact, that one of Gene Kwan's advisors resigned in protest of the police moving in. So they feel that excessive force was used, that it's unfair. But what about what are other people saying?
Well, just to clarify, I mean, I was there the night of the shooting. I was just a few yards away. I would say the community there was adamant at first, saying that this is not one of our guys. This is not about Occupy. What they started chanting almost within minutes of the shooting. Then they formed sort of a human chain around the victim, so that we couldn't photograph what was going on. And then now it's been trickling out. I'm pretty convinced that he, if nothing else, was staying there from time to time from the people I've been talking to. But it, you know, as Bob says, it's unclear what is a protester, who's a hanger on. The whole situation downtown there is a bit amorphous, not a passerby, I don't think.
Can I clarify something, though, Martin? You were there the night of the shooting. Did anybody get help for him? Did anybody get help for him before?
I mean, it was chaotic. What happened was I count at least three shots. There's sort of a clutch of people kind of surge around that scene, and then as it sort of sinks in, what just happened? A lot of people naturally ran from the area for self preservation, but others from the camp, sort of self deputized sort of medic types with, you know, kind of homemade red crosses on their jackets, headed toward him. Then I couldn't really see, you know, how equipped they were to, you know, help a trauma victim. And then within just a few minutes, I'd say maybe 4 or 5 minutes, sirens started and the EMTs were, the firemen were there pretty quickly and helping him professionally.
But can I just ask why there was this move to shield him from view? I'm just curious about why that is.
The whole week there that I was spending time with them, I got an intense sense of anger and suspicion towards the media, or towards what they would call the mainstream media. I think they kind of got, they understood the messages coming from City Hall that this was becoming politically untenable. And I think there's just a sense that no matter what the situation, it's going to be spun against them and be spun in a way that will excuse what's happening this morning, a raid on the camp. So I guess the, you know, one woman basically told me, if you don't put away your gear, you know, you're going to get beat up like the other guys. And she was referring to some TV cameramen who were rushed and one guy was hit. I got the sense it was sort of almost a reflex protection, self-protection for the movement. And, you know, whether or not it was fair, they felt they would be tarred unfairly with what had just happened.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about developments in the Occupy Oakland movement. Our guests are KCBS radio reporter Bob Butler and NPR correspondent Martin Costi. There have been, as you heard, just some very chaotic incidents at the Occupy Oakland encampment, and they're bringing us up to date. So, Bob, what's the situation now? Where does the city, where do both sides think they want to go from here? As we heard that the protesters have been very adamant and very angry about the way that they were treated. But what do they say that they're going to do next, from what you can understand? And what about the rest of the city? What about city officials saying they're doing next?
Well, city officials would love nothing more than for the whole Occupy movement to just go away. There are many officials within the city who support the goal of Occupy, which is, you know, to stop corporate greed. I guess that's the easiest way to say, to clarify what they really want. But the protesters themselves, I mean, yes, the police are there now. They are taking down the tents. And I say now because that's what's happening on Monday. But they say, once this is done, we're coming back. We're going to retake the plaza. And I think if protesters try to take back the plaza, that will be the acid test, because I can't imagine the mayor or the police department wanting to see this Occupy movement reassert itself in Frankagawa Plaza, which you have to remember is right in front of City Hall. You know, when people come to do business with the city, they see this encampment, and they're worried about what it's doing also to the business community. There are businesses right around there that are being hurt because of the camp itself.
And Martin, tell me more about, if you would, about, there's been this ongoing issue in Occupy Wall Street, and there's been this sort of tension and the related movements around the country, this tension over how they are depicted and whether they have leaders and what is their message. And but from your reporting there, what was your sense of the group, of what their intentions were, how long they wanted to stay, what were their hopes in being there?
Well, you know, in some ways, we've heard this refrain from all around the country at these Occupy encampments, where they insist they're a leaderless movement. They don't have a specific list of objectives right now at this moment, political goals. But each site also has its own idiosyncrasies. Kind of each site is a creature of where it is. It was interesting just going back and forth between Berkeley and Oakland, which of course are neighboring cities, on the campus of UC Berkeley. At the same time, the same week, the students were trying to start a camp on campus. The administration didn't take kindly to that and put the university cops out there in riot gear to make sure that didn't happen. But there you got a sense of you know, they have very specific objectives. They want they're concerned about tuition going up, about funding cuts to public education. While in downtown Oakland, it's a far more amorphous. You know, frankly, the people camping there in front of the of City Hall, it was a hodgepodge of outsiders. You know, there were a couple. I just run into people who just come from the Occupy LA, and they thought this was hotter. To locals who live downtown, homeless people who, you know, see sort of the warmth of community forming there, and it's just a human nature to want to join it. Also, some sort of ideologically driven people who have specific objectives, but I'd say they were the small minority there, and people who come and go. A lot of people I interviewed ended up telling me, well, I don't actually sleep here. I sympathize and I come down and participate in general assemblies, but I don't live here. So it's I get the real sense that in some ways the Oakland, Occupy Oakland site was a place for people who needed a place to stay, homeless people and others, while others supported them during the day.
Okay, Bob, final thought from you, and we have about a minute left. I wanted to ask, we've talked about how city officials feel. We've talked about surrounding businesses. And we've talked about the protesters themselves. Any sense of how the larger Oakland community feels about what's going on? I understand that's a difficult question, but what's your sense of it? And we have about a minute, as I said.
From talking to people who live in Oakland, people that live in the Bay Area, the majority of people support the goal of, you know, let's take back the power from the 1%. But I think people are not happy with how it happens. See, the problem is, as they see it, is that you have people that have goals in mind, which, you know, are true goals, are you know, admirable goals. But the problem is you have all these other people that come to kind of glom onto it. You know, the black bloc, the anarchists, that's the biggest fear that people have, is that you're going to have folks that have nothing to do with this movement coming in and tearing up property and making the city look bad.
All right. Bob Butler is a reporter for KCBS Radio. He's been following events in Oakland. He's also vice president of the National Association of Black Journalists. He joined us from the University of California, Berkeley School of Journalism in Berkeley, California. Martin Costi is NPR correspondent in Seattle, and he was kind enough to join us from his office there. Thank you both so much for speaking with us. I hope you'll keep us up to date.
Thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome.